You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But yeah, winning it in 2020, I mean, my son was 6 days old when we won the Premier League. I've waited all my freaking life to watch Liverpool, and I put him in a little Liverpool top, and I was fuming with the little bastard. Just like, he's like 6 days old and we've won the league. I can't believe it.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode and a brand new series of Comedians Talking About Football, the podcast, where each episode we have a different comedian talking about their team. They talk about the lows, the highs, the overpriced pies, everything that comes with being a football fan. Our guest for the first episode of Series 3 is Dave Bibby talking about Liverpool. A fantastic guest, I'm sure you agree, to kick off the season. We've got some excellent guests coming up for the rest of the series as well. So do stick around. Why not subscribe so you get alerted to them whenever they drop, which should be, we're hoping, every Wednesday. And I purposefully put that in the intro so that I make sure I do that every week now. So if you get there on a Wednesday and it's not there, you know I've broken a promise to you. I'm Sam Michael, by the way. I should probably introduce myself. I am the man who is probably going to break that promise. And I'm also the host of this podcast. And I myself am a comedian. As I said, this is the third series of the podcast, which means, of course, we've got loads of previous episodes for you to go to if you are new to Comedians Talking About Football. We've got some great guests from Mark Olver to Nathan Caton, Jacob Hawley, Maisie Adams, Sam White, Paul Cooper from This Country. We've got so many guests in the past for you to listen to, and we've got so many great guests in the future as well. Just want to let you know before we get into this episode that you can find us on social media. We are on Instagram and Twitter with the same handle, which is at ComTalkFootyPod. That's at ComTalkFootyPod, so why not find us on there? You'll find additional content. Speaking of additional content, why not check out our YouTube channel as well, where you'll see exclusive clips from episodes, including some unedited chats as well from previous episodes and episodes coming up. So you can find us on YouTube, just search Comedians Talking About Football and we should come up. So anyway, today's guest is Dave Bibby, who's going to be talking all things Liverpool FC. Now, Dave Bibby is a winner of the Online Comedian of the Year 2020. He's a Musical Comedy Award audience favourite 2018. He's also won the Solo Festival Best Male Act, British Comedy Guide Pro Comedian 2021, and the Leicester Square Theatre Sketch Off 2019. He's very much, he's hot property at the moment, is Dave Bibby, so it was great to have him on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the first episode, Season 3 of Comedians Talking About Football, with Dave Bibby chatting all things Liverpool FC.
Football soccer. At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Excited to be here. I'm sizing up your merch in the background. I love football merch. That's where I'd spend my money if I had any.
Yeah, for those, I mean, there will be a video version of this for those of you on the podcast already kind of rolling your eyes. I mean, he says merch, but what I've essentially got behind me is a score draw framed England 66 shirt, although it has got signatures of some legends at the bottom you probably can't even see. Sir Geoff Hurst, Alan Ball, some names there that my someone got for me over the years. And then behind me is a Reading FC signed shirt from the 08-09 season. All signed, the whole squad have signed it. So that's at least, what, £4.50, I reckon you could get for that on eBay.
I'm getting Leroy Lita vibes. Was he around in that sort of period?
He was. His name's up there. He signed it with a number 8 as well. Love that.
For some reason, he's the one that jumps out.
Oh, yeah. Love him. So, Dave, I really appreciate you coming on. It's good to talk to you. And we're going to be talking all things Liverpool today. We're going to start off with something up the Reds. Indeed. Come on, you Reds. Anfield rap and all that. So we're going to start with a bit of a quick fire round just to get the listeners to get an idea of what sort of fan you are. So, first of all, as we know, Dave Bibby, you support Liverpool FC.
Yeah.
Okay, first question. First home game you went to?
First home game I went to, I think, was the last day of the Kop where we played Norwich. Absolutely nailed on to smash them because we're the great Liverpool FC and they're Norwich and all the legends came out. Lost 1-0, Jeremy Gough, top corner. so that's the first Liverpool game I went to.
Amazing.
It was the last day of the Kop.
Okay, second question. Liverpool FC, are Liverpool your local team?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I grew up in Bedfordshire, lived in London for many years. I now live in Hertfordshire. So they are very much not my local team. I don't even know who my local team are. I suppose they'd be Stevenage or someone like that. Watford? Was Luton closer? I don't know.
Next question. When Klopp leaves, who takes over?
Oh, I think potentially Pep Linders' assistant. There aren't any good managers in the Premier League called Pep at the moment. So potentially there's a space there. Yeah, I think, yeah, potentially, yeah, maybe big Pep Linders.
Steven Gerrard at Aston Villa, do you approve?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. I love Steven Gerrard. Anything that he does, I'm happy with, unless he sort of starts managing United or Everton, but I can't see that happening. Yeah, he's a good manager and he wants to get the Premier League. He wants the big job, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. Anfield rap, yes or no?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Had it on CD. Don't worry about that. I've got a tiny little John Barnes collectible still in the packet over here, in fact. I'm that much of a fan of the Anfield rap. Had a hamster called John Barnes.
That's amazing. Love it. Okay, the big question. Club over country, yes or no?
Oof. Probably yes. Yes, probably club. Yeah. I go to a lot. I used to travel with England a lot and I used to see probably more England games than I did Liverpool games, unfortunately. And I'm glad England have started doing well in those last few years because I'm of a generation where England were okay. We'd go into a tournament and be all right. And there were like fully grown men, like 20-year-olds who would be like, well, what's the point of international football? Like, because of Euro 96 and France 98. And, you know, but they were born around there, so they don't remember it. And so I'm glad we've been all right. But yeah, I mean, Liverpool's got to be the number one for me. And then I'd like England to do well. I'm not one of these that hates international football.
Mm. Okay, well then we're going to put that answer to the test here. My final question is, only one of these things can happen in your lifetime. Manchester United are beaten in their record for the most amount of first-tier championships with Liverpool overtaking them, or England win the World Cup.
Oh, I don't know. Well, if England win the World Cup, then Liverpool never overtake United. Is that right?
So England can win the World Cup, but Man United will always have the record over Liverpool. But if you change that round, Liverpool in your lifetime beat that record, they win the top tier, the top flight of football championship, record amount of times beating, smashing even Man United's record, but England will never win a World Cup.
I'm going to show what a massive fraud I am and change, because I think England winning a World Cup would be the big one, wouldn't it? I mean, you'd like to see England win a World Cup, unite the nation. That is the big one. I wouldn't do it for the Euros. Okay, let me draw the line there. But I think we're one behind United now. To think that we wouldn't overtake them is painful. But England winning the World Cup. Sorry, my son's going to bed. He started crying. So people are listening, going, "God, Dave's like crying in between words, just at the thought of Liverpool not beating Man United's championship record." But England winning a World Cup would be the big one. I know a couple of people, old people, who went to 66 and they still talk about it. And my mate, Big Pete Hardy, he went to Mexico 1970. And he'll bring out Mexico 1970 stories as if it happened a couple of weeks ago. I would love to go to a World Cup where England win it. That would be amazing.
Did you get to any of the Euros games?
No, unfortunately not. When it was, before it was postponed and it was scheduled properly for 2020, I applied everywhere. And Dublin and Budapest and everything. I was like, go wherever. And I just couldn't get tickets. And then, sort of tried again, but it just didn't happen. Turns out he didn't need a ticket. He just had to just sort of turn up and get behind the boys, really. So I should have just done that. But no, I didn't actually get to it. I'm going to Wembley in a few weeks. I didn't make the Euros.
I don't know about you. I mean, obviously, did you find that a lot of comedians were somehow getting tickets to go there? I know, like, Rob Beckett and et cetera, but I just felt like the whole of London open mic scene went to a game at least one point. So Liverpool then, where did it all start for you, Dave? What were your earliest memories of supporting Liverpool FC?
Well, as we've said from my accent, I'm not from Liverpool. Someone of my age and my accent should support, you know, Man United, really. Like a lot of people grew up around here. But yeah, the answer to me becoming a Liverpool is a mix of my dad and John Barnes. All my family from up north. I was born down south.
I thought you meant they brought you up then. North. I thought that's what a parenthood that would be. My dad and John Barnes brought me up.
So far ahead of their time. And the listeners know that John Barnes was a hamster. So really, quite impressive. No, yeah, so I'm the youngest of three boys, baby boys. And they're both my older brothers are Luton Town fans. And so we grew up near Luton. My dad got a job in Luton and moved down south. And then I was born down south, whereas my brothers were born up north, and yet they support Luton. And I just sort of think, we used to be season ticket holders at Luton. We'd travel with Luton and everything. But my dad was like, oh, I've got three sons. Two of them support Luton. I've got this last one, and I'm sort of 7-8 years old, and I'm just starting to get into football. The Premier League is just being established around that time, sort of early to mid-90s. And so my dad sort of took me to Liverpool, and we watched a few games, and it was John Barnes, who was really past his best. I didn't know that at the time, but he was miles past his best then. I just absolutely loved him. I was just obsessed with John Barnes and my dad, and I loved going to the games. And it was like, I just remember, like, my early memories of games is, can I look after your car for you, mate? Give us a quid, I'll look after your car for you, mate. It just felt like a foreign country to me, like going up to Liverpool, even though we'd spend, like, all my family from Barrow up in Cumbria, we'd spend a lot of time up north. Liverpool was just like this island off the coast of England, as far as I was concerned. It was a magical place. Whereas, you know, in Luton, they would just take your car straight off. They wouldn't ask for a quid. Early memories are going. Scousers offering to look after my dad's car and then going to watch matches. Like I said, went to the last game with the cop. And so they were sort of still standing. But we weren't actually in the cop. We're in the seated just off to the left there. And I just remember just watching the fans for ages, you know, just watching them. And then eventually, getting a chance to stand in the cop, but by then you had to buy a seat to be able to stand in the cop, sort of thing. I didn't know at the time, but I timed it awfully becoming a Liverpool fan. We're talking about sort of 93, 94, something like that, sort of mildly getting into football and then properly getting into it in the mid-90s. And we were almost good for about 20 years, me supporting Liverpool, you know what I mean? That's where it all began. John Barnes and my dad and Scousers looking for a quid to look after the car.
So, like you said there, it was a bit of a funny time to become a Liverpool fan. Ne- they're never a bad team. Never a bad team, but it was that change to the Premier League, or the Premiership as it was known back then. Yeah. And obviously they'd had success, I think a season or two before that, winning the then Division One league, you know, a many number of times. And then I think, you know, it was around the end of Dalglish's first run.
That's right,
and you still had some fantastic players, but it did just seem to be around the time that the kind of the kids of Manchester United started taking over.
Yeah.
Leeds were doing very well at the time as well. Was there a bit of a frustration there for you that this team that you supported were always nearly there, but not quite there?
That's the thing. You see it with teams at the moment. I suppose this current Liverpool team could potentially end up with nothing this season, which would be awful because they're sort of, you know, they've got they're in with a chance of getting something. But I think potentially they will get something. If not, then next season they'll probably get something, you know, ridden around it. But you look at Arsenal and United and Tottenham, and you just think they would be better off. In fact, maybe Arsenal have had that. They'd be better off getting really bad for a season or two, regrouping and saying, this is where we are now, accepting that, buying the kind of players that can move you to the next level, as opposed to, like, I don't know, Man United sort of buy Cavani and Ronaldo and your man Varane and people like that, who are great, like world-class players, or at least were world-class players. So they're only going to be good for another season or two, and it's going to be just almost good. And that's worse, because you either want to be genuinely good at winning stuff or rubbish and, like, restructure everything. And we had to get really bad before we restructured and got Klopp in. It's only then, looking back, you're like, God, we were almost good for so long. You know, like Steven Gerrard, he never would have stayed if we weren't almost good. Because if we were rubbish, he would have left. And if we were brilliant, okay, he would have stayed and he would have won things. And if we got bad, he would have left. But he spent his whole career being like, well, getting closer, yeah, we might do it. And that was pretty much me supporting Liverpool. You know, you get the odd Carling Cup or something like that. And you think, right, well, next year we can compete with the big boys.
I was going to say about that, because it wasn't like you didn't have your victories here and there. I suppose around the time you would have been getting into it was not long after, in the Premier League, you had what was called the top four. So it was yourselves, Liverpool, with Manchester United, Arsenal and Chelsea, always kind of competing at the top, always going for the trophies. So I want to talk a little bit, as we're sort of moving through the 90s, about, if you remember the FA Cup final, 1996, the Spice Boys in the white suits.
Yeah, yeah. I specifically remember it. We didn't go to that match, but we had a barbecue around our house. And by then I would have been playing football for sort of my local team. I'd have been probably under 10s, under 11s around then. And, you know, United are obviously the top team in the country because they'd won a couple of titles and everything else. But Liverpool were supposed to be getting back to their best, and they had their own young players. It was such a boring game that at that age, that 90 minutes felt so long. And I remember sort of being stood at the sort of patio doors of my house and watching Cantona score that winning goal. And then just being like, because we went out in the end, me and the other kids who came around, ended up just going into the garden and playing football as opposed to watching it, because it was so boring that we just sort of went out. But yeah, I love listening to stories of those Spice Boys as well, because they let out a little bit more information as they get older and older. And you realise that, Jesus, they were just, like, every week at the moment, there's like someone else is in trouble on social media, a modern footballer. And I think if people had smartphones in the 90s, Jesus Christ, some of the footage we were seeing from the Spice Boys or the Arsenal drinking crew. And, you know, that's sort of my memory of that Liverpool team. It's what a great drinking team. You know, they were almost good at football.
There are some great stories from back then. I suppose you've probably seen them, or might have even been involved before, with these kind of an evening with an ex-footballer. You know, sort of. Have you done any of those gigs before, or have you attended many of them? Or?
Yeah, I do a lot of live event hosting, and including like auctions, charity auctions, and things like that. And sometimes there's an ex-footballer or an ex-sportsman there, and you can always tell the crowd, because if you're like a football club, like a you know, Saturday, Sunday league club, they'll get someone like Razor Ruddock, and all they want to talk about is like getting pissed and shagging and everything else. And then you get more business ones. I remember I did one with Sir Clive Woodward, and he was very much breaking down the mentality of top-level athletes and things like that. So I've seen sort of everything in between. And a free tip from me, if you are going to go to a charity auction, go look at the things that are on that auction. Look at the different things they have and the names, and think to yourself, who is going to die soon? Okay. Because the value shoots up when someone died. You see someone who's died recently and they go in the auction for loads of money. I think, I had that shirt, okay, you know, a couple of auctions ago, and no one wanted to buy it. And now he's dead. Everyone wants it. You know, I always think that. Like, oh, they signed Michael Caine. I think, right, he's running out of time. I think I might make an investment here. You know, you want sort of Attenboroughs and people like that. And they're in the same in the sporting world. So I've seen some good. And the other thing is, they do their stories on stage, and then afterwards you get the extra stories that they're like, well, I couldn't really say this, but.
Oh, nice.
And they're always quite good. And they always go, I won't tell you his name. He was like, I can tell who that is, because yeah. You know, you've made it so obvious. I remember Carl telling me a story, and he was like, I won't tell you who did it, I won't tell you. And it was so clearly, what was his name, who West Ham legend, he's still there, missed a penalty against Man United earlier this season. Mark Noble.
Yeah, Mark Noble. There you go. Yeah.
So yeah, Carl Cole's giving us this story, and he's going, "Well, I'll tell you your name." I'm like, "This is definitely Mark Noble." You can just tell by the way he tells. You know. So I like trying to spot those. It's sort of the after dinner speeches that are pretty good.
Love it. First of all, I want to agree with you on that whole look at memorabilia stuff. Because when we were talking kind of at the beginning, you were very, again, apologies for those listening to the podcast. There will be a video version available on the YouTube channel. Subscribe now. Search Comedians Talking About Football into YouTube. You'll find us. To my right of me, there's a framed shirt. It's a replica of the 66 final away shirt that obviously everyone knows, the red long sleeved. And below, you can't quite see it, but there's kind of a framed bit of paper with lots of signatures on, and it was one my auntie got me. She went to corporate for the England-Spain game in Euro 96, and she was working for Sony at the time, and she has no clue about football, didn't enjoy it at all. And my dad was livid, being a huge football fan, that he felt like he could have maybe taken her tickets or whatever. But anyway, she went along for business, and she said, oh, I came home, I got you some signatures, and on there are names like, you know, Martin Peters, Alan Ball, Jeff Hurst, Nobby Styles. There's some great names on there. And every time one of these legends dies, my dad texts me and goes, tick another name off the list on that bit of paper, that little A4 bit of paper that when I was like seven, when she gave that to me, I thought, what is this? Wow. What is this rubbish? Yeah. Who are these people? And my dad's like, these are English. He's like, right, you're not having that. You can have that back when you're 21 and you appreciate the names on this bit of paper. But yeah, various signatures we got signed. And, you know, as the years have gone on, that little bit there has just become a little, you know, more and more valuable as the years have gone on.
Limited edition.
Yeah.
They don't do those signatures anymore.
So with those afternoon speakers, as we mentioned, I went to one, the last one I ever went to actually, was John Barnes, and obviously, yes, you know, your favorite players of all time, and he told some fantastic stories. And going back to what you were saying about the drinking culture back then, what's great is John Barnes sounds like he was such a good little boy when he arrived at Liverpool, and apparently it was you know, Gobbler who basically went and knocked on his door and said, right, you're coming out with us. And the stories he told about him and the players back then were just unbelievable. And he did the same thing. He did that sort of, I shouldn't tell you this story, but he did it to a room of like 300 people. And it was just fantastic to hear these sort of stories. And you're absolutely right. If there was any kind of documentation of what they got up to back then behind closed doors, oh, none of them will be pundits anymore.
No. I mean, yeah, you look at a photo of John Barnes when he signed for Liverpool and a photo when he left. Obviously, he's a few years older, but he's about twice as heavy.
Yeah.
He's like, he's clearly been out drinking, eating what he wants, you know. And that is just before the real change. I think Arsene Wenger was that first manager who came in from the continent and said, what if we drink just one glass of red wine instead of 24 cans each? I dread to think if there were camera phones back in those days, the kind of stories that would come out every weekend.
I would love to be a fly on the wall when Arsene Wenger said that, because it wasn't like he just came into like a European team as a bet. He went to Arsenal. We had like the likes of Paul Merson, Ray Parler, Tony Adams. How did he get them? Well, maybe he didn't in some cases. It sounds like they managed to sneak away from him and do whatever. But it's and that obviously all happened in that period when you were getting into football. There was that change in the culture. Going into the late 90s, I suppose that's when Liverpool started to pick up a few titles. There was the UEFA Cup final in 2000. Yep. And one, I think 4-3, I think that finished after extra time, or 5-4, something like that. What was your memories of them? Because that was when Michael Owen kind of really jumped onto the scene, after a very exciting World Cup 98.
Yeah, it was a really great time, because living down south, I've got so many mates who support other clubs, and my in-laws are all from Salford, and they've got friends who are season ticket holders at Old Trafford and stuff like that. I've spent a life being in like the wrong end. So for example, when Liverpool beat Arsenal in the FA Cup final in 2001, which Arsenal absolutely battered us, Michael Owen scored two on the counter-attack and Liverpool won 2-1. And I think Stefan Honcho handballed it as well, if I remember rightly. Gold kit. But I was in the Arsenal end with some Arsenal mates. So I was sat there going, you're cheating, I can't believe it. Oh, no. And then it was at the Millennium Stadium. And then later that summer, the Community Shield was then against Man United. And I was in the United end because a load of people got a coach trip from Luton, United fans. And we've got a ticket if you want it. I was like, I'll come along. And I remember my mate Burley, who we still constantly wind each other up. Again, I think Michael Owen scored, and we're all going, I was doing my best, like fake Mancunian. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh no, Scouse smashed it. And I'm just nudging him with my elbow, just nudging him along. And he's going, if you do that one more time, and I'll call you out. Do that one more time. I was only like 15, 16, I must have been.
Yeah.
And I was nudging him going, oh, I can't believe it. So yeah, in 2001, I wasn't at UEFA Cup final. I did watch it, but I don't have that much memory. I don't have as much memories of UEFA Cup final. I have memories of like us beating Everton late on in the league. And I have memories of obviously the FA Cup final that I was at. And then the Community Shield, I think it was still the Charity Shield in those days soon after. Because again, giving away my age here, but the new Wembley was being built. So yeah, that was a great time. And again, if you've got someone like Owen coming through, you think, well, we can take on the world, you know. Like we say, we beat Arsenal that day. Well, they were miles better than us. But if you've got someone that pacey, turns out his hamstrings were rubbish and he wanted to go to Real Madrid. but it was a time because you had Roy Evans and then Gerard Houllier came in, and then you just sort of went just to Gerard Houllier. And it's a very weird period. I think the United fans called it the Mickey Mouse treble. you were winning three trophies without that big Premier League one that we all wanted. It was good times. But again, we drifted off again for a couple of years until Rafa came in after that, I think, really.
And then I suppose came along some slightly better years around the mid-2000s, and that infamous night in the 2005 Champions League final. Now, we've had a guest on here before who was a Liverpool fan, Mark Olver, and he spoke about his experience of that final. Which is sort of half really, really cool and half really, really sad. So if you haven't listened to it, basically he spent the Champions League final texting John Oliver, the world famous John Oliver, throughout the game. But the reason he was doing that is that John Oliver was giving him score updates, because on the night of the Champions League final, Mark Olver was the warm-up man for Deal or No Deal.
Oh, wow.
So he spent his whole evening with Noel Edmonds, who apparently had no interest in football. And no, his whole warm-up act basically consisted of him talking to the crowd about how much he didn't really want to be there and wish he was watching the Liverpool game. And he says there were a few men in the audience kind of nodding along like, yeah, we didn't really want to be here either. Like,
so he got an update and he was like, oh, 3-0 down. Thank God I'm not watching it. I'd rather be making some money.
Well, I think it got to the point where he managed to just catch the penalties in the back room somewhere. Right. I think it might have even been Noel Edmonds' dressing room. I can't confirm that, but I think he managed to find a telly and just catch the penalties. Yeah, so what was your experience then? Was it better or worse than the warm-up act for Deal or No Deal?
Well, it was better because I got to watch the game.
Yeah.
But by 2005, I'm at university in North London. And just the same as most of my upbringing, living down south, I'm surrounded by Arsenal, Tottenham and West. I'm thinking of the lads that are there and West Ham fans, right? Yeah. So I invite everybody round, thinking, well, it's an English team in a Champions League final. It doesn't happen that often. Even if you don't like us, you'll get behind the lads. So I invite them round to my crappy little student house and they start spanking us so hard early doors. Like, they were so, so much better than us. It's ridiculous. And I remember being in the toilet at half time and I even sort of said out loud, please just go home. Like, the saddest. Because we're 3-0 down at that point. I thought 3-1 would be a brilliant result, but it's more likely 7-0. Because if they get one more, the heads go down and they're really going to start taking the mickey. And I just remember being in the toilet and just, I've even been on the cans and the beer snacks and just like, here we go. Because, you know, Liverpool have got a great European history, but like I said, for the timing of me becoming a fan, all before I became a fan. So I'd literally waited my whole life for that. Whereas I'm a Liverpool fan. So like, oh, in the 80s, we did this. In the 70s, I was there in Turin or whatever. No, for me, this was it. And then the second half, by the end, even like the West Ham Arsenal lads, they were like cheering for Liverpool because it was such a dramatic turnaround. I don't think they would admit that now, but it was such an incredible game that they got on board with it. I must admit, my memory's crap sometimes. Sometimes someone points something out about a game or a player, and I'm like, I forgot I even played for Liverpool. And then but that one game, I think it's just like every single moment is like etched into my mind. It's just the greatest game ever of being a Liverpool fan, just the absolute best.
So then that was the Champions League ticked off. 5 times you've won it. Very impressive. And then I suppose it was a quest for the Premier League next. That was 2005. Yeah. You didn't collect the Premier League trophy and medals until 2020. How would you describe the journey from 2005? Because I did feel like, okay, the aim was always to get the you know, to win the Premier League. Sure, everyone who's in the Premier League at least tries that. But I suppose after that Champions League win, it felt like, yeah, this is it. This is gonna happen now. And over the next kind of 15 years, you had to put up with some very close calls. The Brendan Rodgers era, the slip. Yeah. What's your kind of memories of being that frustrated Liverpool fan, initially chasing, I suppose, the Incredibles of Arsenal? The Champions League win, the Incredibles of Arsenal, then Manchester United in the last days of Ferguson, then Man City.
And Abramovich's Chelsea as well.
Yeah, of course, all of those
guys had a crack. That student flat watching a 2005 Champions League final, the same student flat the following year was the FA Cup final where we played West Ham, and that was a Gerrard final where he scored in extra time, and that was like was it 3-3 or something like that, and again it went to pens. Just like an absolutely mad final. And again, so Rafa sort of signs people like Xabi Alonso and Peter Crouch and Luis Garcia and Pepe Reina. And you think, okay, these guys are genuinely good. But for whatever reason, we just couldn't get it over the line. And every time we missed out, it felt like we took the following season, it took us a bit longer to get going again, like to get over the disappointment of the previous season. And I think a lot of fans used to sort of wind up Liverpool fans being like, we always say this is our year and stuff like that, but I don't ever genuinely remember thinking we're going to win the league because we're just so used to it not happening. But Rafa did, well, he won the Champions League so quickly in his first season. And he followed that up in the FA Cup. You think the Premier League is the next step, but he went mad. He just went mental. He was trying to sell Xabi Alonso to buy Gareth Barry. And you're just like, how can you be so good and yet so bad at the same time? Like, he's a Liverpool legend, but he made some weird decisions. He seemed to destroy himself. And then, yeah, fast forward to Brendan Rodgers. By then, we were proper, like, we're still a big club, but like underdogs. We just sort of, in the same way that Michael Owen nicked the 2001 FA Cup final, we had Suarez and we had a young Sterling, and Sturridge was fit for like almost a whole season. So suddenly, you know, it doesn't matter how dodgy we were at the back. We just kept scoring goals. But before you knew it, you know, we threw it away. Although I have to say, no one ever talks about how much Chelsea were favourites for that season. And they had all the games in hand and they bottled it, which handed it to either Liverpool or City. And then we bottled it and then City took it. But I think because Chelsea had won it before, it was like Liverpool had bottled it. But we only had a small window of opportunity after Chelsea bottled it to bottle it ourselves, which we sure enough did.
Comedians talking about football.
It's one thing I love to talk to all Liverpool fans about, and that is that little Roy Hodgson era. And it's a bit of a feature we do on here as well. We like to talk about the best memories, the most, you know, get everyone listening to feel nostalgic for those good days, even though I suppose the good days have come quite recently for Liverpool. But we also have to look back at those dark days. Now, I was going to assume that other than the sort of long chase in the 90s of kind of not picking up anything, I guess the low point would be the Roy Hodgson. I don't know whether era is the right name, the Roy Hodgson 5 minutes. Talk me through it and what happened there.
Mate, the hardest thing about hating Roy Hodgson is that he is a very nice, intelligent man. He speaks like seven languages. He's well-loved in football, but he was the worst match for Liverpool ever. Everyone was like, oh, Liverpool fans, you know, you try and constantly convince everyone you're best fans in the world and you're booing your own manager. But I was like 100% behind the fans that were booing, because in the end we moved on and got someone else. It was just the like even when we're bad, right, we're still Liverpool. So we're not the biggest club in the world maybe, but we can attract good players. And so he saw that and bought Paul Konchesky. It was just like, come on, you can attract loads of players to Liverpool. Even if we're not the absolute best right now, you can still get a good left back. But he was just, it was awful. And there are strong rumours that, you know, Gerrard had a penalty and it was kind of like, well, if he scores this, we get the winner, we move on. If he misses, that's Roy Hodgson out. And he missed it. And you see like a wry smile on Gerrard's face. And I think it's sort of Liverpool legend, whether it's true or not. But yeah. He was like, we need this fucker out of here. It was dark days. But of course, you had the Dalglish era in between there as well, a sort of second coming of Dalglish. And he was just buying, like, I think he bought Henderson, didn't he? And he bought Andy Carroll for what then was like unbelievable money. And he bought some, we just bought some mad players down the years. And it wasn't really until Klopp came in and Michael Edwards that it all settled down and we started to seem to have some sort of transfer plan. But it was just like, Andy Carroll, he scored a couple of goals, let's get him in here. We had Crouch a few seasons ago, that big fella did well, let's get that big unit in. And then we tried Benteke and people like that. It just doesn't make any sense for the kind of football that we wanted to play. So yeah, the Roy Hodgson was the darkest days. But again, I still feel bad saying it, he was awful. He was the worst England manager I've had and the worst Liverpool manager I've had, but he just seems like a lovely bloke. So I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
So then the good times come in. In enters Klopp. What was your feelings when he arrived? Because he'd had quite a good run with Borussia Dortmund. He got into you know, Champions League final, everything. Did you think it was a big step up or a big risk?
No, I thought I was really like buzzing about that. Typical football fan. You know, I'd very occasionally see a bit of Bundesliga. If I'm watching Champions League, it's usually to watch English teams or a big, big, you know, Juventus versus Barcelona or something like that. So obviously my knowledge of sort of German football isn't that great. But was I going to admit that? Absolutely not. I was like, I've always rated Klopp. What he did at Dortmund, his relationship with the fans, is a perfect fit. And I just sort of did that thing of convincing myself, ready to be let down. But it turned out all right in the end. But he really is, when he retires, watch Liverpool drop.
Yeah.
Like if you're like not a Liverpool fan and you listen to this guy talking his non-Liverpool accent about, yeah, we are really good now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't worry. Don't worry, because we don't have the billionaires behind us. We just have Klopp. And we will drop so fast down that league when he retires, which is coming up quite fast. But yeah, it's just been amazing. He said something recently. He said that Liverpool fans are sort of fans of the journey, of the story. Mm. And that's totally true. And sometimes we convince ourselves we're underdogs, which is, you know, if you support like Wigan or something and the Liverpool fans go, you know, we're underdogs, you need to shut up, mate. You don't know what we're talking about. Like, okay, so we're not underdogs in the same way that Leicester won the league, but we're not financially doping in the same way that you know, Paris Saint-Germain or City or whatever are doing something that is just like, we'll see what Newcastle do, but it's a mix of having some money and just really good coaching, I think.
When did you first see it sort of start to click for Klopp? When did you kick for Klopp? That sounded good. So when did you
the name realize... of the title of the podcast?
Yeah.
This episode, it clicks for Klopp.
Yeah, when did you see the players, you know, like Mo Salah was starting to fit in nicely. You had that kind of front three who played fantastically together in the season that you won. You know, you had a great captain, defence, you know, bringing in Van Dijk from Southampton, that might have been a bit of a risk. You do get sometimes these players who do really well for kind of the bottom of the Premier League teams and then come at the top and they just can't really hack it. But he just seemed to fit in so nicely. Great keeper. Yeah. When did you look at it and go, that's a Premier League winning team?
It was our Champions League run when we got, even before then, because we got to the Europa League final and we lost that one. I was on a flight, so I sort of saw the score and I was like, oh, well, we're doing okay. And then the flight landed and we lost. but we had a run where we beat Dortmund, United, you know, over two legs. And at the time they were, because Dortmund had won, the big trophies. United had obviously won everything. We beat those over two legs, including the Dortmund where I think Ragnar Klavan and Lovren both scored like dramatic headers and stuff, you know. And it's at that point okay. And then we quite quickly get to the Champions League final where Sergio Ramos showed his footballing nous by saying, take out Salah, we'll beat these lads. And that's exactly what we did. But again, on the way there, we were so like counter-attacking football. We were like, put six past Porto and things like that. And you think, well, if nothing else, this is exciting. Sooner or later, we're going to get over the line. And then by the following season, I think, yeah, you know, at Liverpool, City, Chelsea got fairly close, but Liverpool and City both got 90-something points. And if you look at, this is why stats are bollocks, but if you look at that run-in, they both got 90-something points. You think that must have been the best when City won it the year before us. That must have been the best title race ever. No, because Liverpool and City played each other in January. City went a couple of points ahead and both teams won all their remaining games. Mm. It's only a good title race if someone slips up and the other one wins and then there's a draw and then they still got to go away to their rivals. No, both teams just beat everybody. So I think Klopp said at the beginning of the next season, well, if we do that again, we'll win the league, because it was unlikely that two teams would do it. And sure enough, that's what happened. But yeah, winning it in 2020, I mean, my son was 6 days old when we won the Premier League. I've waited all my freaking life to watch Liverpool. And I put him in a little Liverpool top and I was fuming with the little bastard. Just like, he's like 6 days old and we've won the league. I can't believe it. But yeah, it was sad for the fans not to be there. It was weird watching that. I really hope, I don't think we'll do it this season, but I really hope that Klopp lifts the trophy and has all the fans there, because his relationship with the fans is amazing. You saw it when we drew with West Brom in one of his early seasons and they took a bow. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Liverpool West Brom, because he always used to make the players do a bow to the fans. But that was the day that we stopped doing it, because it was one all home draw with West Brom. But he has that relationship with the fans. Oh, it's such a shame that they weren't there when we won the league.
Yeah, I was going to ask actually how you celebrated because it was quite. So I think Man United fans really took pleasure in the fact that Liverpool had waited 30 years to win the Premier League, and they finally do, and they had to lift it to an empty Klopp. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was. I mean, obviously you take it either way, but you finally win the Premier League. What did you do that day to celebrate in lockdown?
So I was I was a mess of a man. Yeah, because, of course, it was delayed as well. So, you know, the Premier League stopped for a couple of months and then started up again. And by the time it had stopped, we were pretty much nailed on. We only needed a win or two. So I think I celebrated with I tell you what, I remember, so same as I had a couple of cans in, you know, just take the edge off, stop the shakes. But I remember the season before when we played Barcelona in the second leg of that Champions League. We'd lost 3-0 in the Camp Nou. And so we needed to win 4-0 at home against Barcelona and Messi. So that was never going to happen. Mm. So there were no hashtag cans in the Bibby fridge. And by the end, I was like, all right, alcoholic. I was like, I need a drink. I was like, what have I got? Scotch. I've got scotch. I never drink scotch at home. And I was smacking the scotch, shouting Divock Origi home. And I think when we won the league, I did the same thing. So I was there with my little baby and like, right, come on, get the scotch out. Here we go. This is it. We've finally done it. I've got two rescue cats and I have to kind of celebrate without scaring them. It's muted scenes.
Probably not how you imagined it as a teenager then.
No. And the same with like England getting to the Euro 2020, you know, delayed final. Like I say, I used to travel with England. I used to go and watch a load of games. And again, when England used to play at Old Trafford and that, when Wembley was being rebuilt and the Millennium Stadium, we used to go on tour and we used to watch the games. You know, amazing, but we had some crap teams. You know, I remember watching England at Old Trafford. We beat Jamaica like 6-2 or something like that. And Crouch got a hat trick last game before the World Cup. We thought, this is our year. No, of course it wasn't. So it's kind of sad that when I was there and in the mix, we were rubbish. But now I'm sat at home with a baby who's just pooing on me and two cats. But it's still means a lot to me. But I'm just there on my own, just like, come on, get the scotch. Let's do this.
Comedians talking about football.
Dave, let's talk a bit about your stand-up. So you did your first show you did in 2019, Nobody Puts Bibby in a Corner.
Yeah, I did. I used to be in a sketch group called Lead Pencil, and we did it. He did a few shows up at the Fringe, and then I took a show called Nobody Puts Bibby in the Corner up, and then I took another show called Crazy Cat Laddie, both shows are sort of a mix. I do sort of quite surreal, well, not surreal, but I do sketches and songs and characters, loads of audience interaction, bit of improv and stuff like that. And then I do slightly more normal stuff on the comedy circuit. not quite like, I put my USB in upside down, or about them self-checkouts. Still a little bit alternative, but I've got sort of two personalities on the comedy circuit. I've got my shows, which are a bit weird, and then you've got your normal sort of club stuff, which is more a bloke called Dave doing some jokes.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, you know, I sort of found some of your stuff online, and I like comedians who do quite a lot in the business. And obviously you do obviously these quite alternative stuff. You even won a musical comedian award as well, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. When I came back into sort of, cause I used to do like open mic stuff about 10 years ago, and I sort of knocked about doing that. And then I focused more on my acting. Then when I came back, I thought, let's do some songs and stuff. And yes, since then, I've done a few competitions. In 2018, I won the Musical Comedy Awards. 2019, I got to the final of Sketch Off. I was rubbish in the final, but it doesn't matter. I still put it on the posters. 2020, I won the Online Comedian of the Year. So 2021 would have been the first year since I came back where I hadn't won an award. But thankfully, I'm in the British Comedy Guide Pro Comedian Final this year.
Nice.
But they're dating it as 2021. So I've carried on my streak of musical comedy in 2018, a sketch comedy in 2019, online comedy in 2020. And now I don't know what I'll do for the pro comedy, probably a bit of a mix of everything. So, yeah, I need to keep that up, you know, I can't go full Liverpool and leave it 20 years before I win anything.
And I kind of knew you anyway from doing kind of, I've known your name sort of through football as well, you know, being one of these comedians who, like myself, is sort of, you know, I love, and this is why I started this podcast, really. I've always loved having conversations with comedians about football.
Yeah.
Because there's that slightly obsessive gene in there, isn't there? You never need to meet a casual comedian who's kind of a casual fan. They've got some obsession with it, which is great. And obviously, you've been doing various sort of projects over the years to do with football as well. I've seen you pop up here and there. You've got a new podcast out as well. What's Your Team? Now, that's a podcast where you bring someone on every episode to talk about the team they support. Where did you come up with such a genius original idea?
So Jim Daly, who hosts it with me, he does loads of podcasts. There's Crystal Palace one. He does this Blank podcast. And he phoned me and said, Dave, I've got this great idea for a podcast. I've got a great idea for a pod. And I was like, well, yeah, that does sound quite good. It's kind of podcast 101, you know. It's it's not like he's reinventing the wheel there, but yeah, it's you take someone who's not necessarily a comedian, someone involved in hashtag show business, and talk about their sort of connection to a club, even favorite kits and favorite memories and things like that. So definite crossover with this podcast.
There's no podcast beef, don't worry guys, but I did get someone alert me to it a couple of weeks back. They went, have you seen this? And there's like, they've even got the football sticker thing going on. I was like, did you really think I'm the person who originated the parody football 90 sticker? Like, have you never heard of Quickly Kevin, for God's sake? But I was like, they were like, yeah, have you seen this? I was like, no, I haven't, but great, I'm going to listen to it. I was like, Toby Tarrant at a Reading game, I'm going to love this. I was kind of hoping it was going to be, I was like, oh my God, first episode, Reading. And it was, no, it was very quickly to talk about Liverpool. I was like, yeah, okay. But it's a great podcast, and obviously looking forward to the future episodes. Can you tell us, there'll probably be, by the time this podcast's come out, there'll be more available. You can find it on Spotify, assuming wherever you find your podcasts. Can you let us know any guests you've got coming up?
Let me remind myself. Right, so Toby Tarrant was the first episode.
Yeah.
Matt Horn, aka Gavin from Gavin and Stacey. I can't find him. I can't even remember that. Oh, there's one. Tony Cowards.
Lovely. Yeah, we got Tony coming up on this one soon.
Oh, great. Yeah. I can imagine you've got to listen to both of them back to back. Tom Deacon, who's another comedian. He's Southampton. Who else did we have? I can't remember now. We've got some great guests, but as you can tell, I'm just sort of there as like the idiot. Jim's like, even like you say, like the stickers and stuff. And I said the exact same thing to him. He was like, right, I've done this sort of branding. I was like, that is very Quickly Kevin. He was like, yeah. Okay, fine. Because I listen to Quickly Kevin. It's a great podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's very much, he organizes, edits and hosts it. And I'm just the idiot that comes on and tells bad jokes. But we were just about to start recording for the next series as well. But the best thing is, if you get into a green room as another football fan that you know, and there's either football on that night, or there'd been a big match the day before, the weekend before, and you're like, yeah, how are you? And then you kind of go on stage with that energy of being kind of free and natural, as opposed to talking about career stuff. You just talk about football, and you get so into it, and then they call your name. You're like, shit, I'm on. So I always get excited if I see another football comedian in the green room.
I do. I like it as well. It's quite funny sometimes when there's the majority of football fans and you just find that one alienated person. So I remember not long ago, I did a gig in Reading, and it was me and Jamie D'Souza and Andrew White were all chatting about football. And the headliner was, do you know Bobby Nair?
Yeah.
And he was just sat there like, what are you guys fucking talking about? Like, it was really like... I suppose we'll finish on everybody's favourite section of the podcast. It is the fantasy five-a-side football team. And we don't want the best players, Dave. We don't need him. We don't want your Gerrards. We don't need your Mo Salahs. We want the players that mean something to you. I want your all-time fantasy five-a-side team of cult-like heroes from Liverpool. Who have you got?
Right. Okay. So I should probably start in goal, because that sort of makes sense. But the keeper is the hardest one because I've got loads of names of sort of midfielders and struggling people that sort of came in for a short period and did something. A lot of the goalkeepers are just sort of being it. So Grobbelaar would have been the first one. The big one is Jerzy Dudek for his Istanbul, you know, sort of thing. And then Pepe Reina was probably the best keeper of my Liverpool supporting thing. And then you've got like Yaminiles. I really quite like Sander Vesterveld as well. He had a short period where he was quite good in goal. And I always remember I was having Brad Friedel for quite a short period and thinking that he was quite good, but he was no good with the ball at his feet. And then he left Liverpool and ended up playing Premier League football for like another 15 years or something like that. So I think Pepe Reina for me is too good to be in my cult five. Adrian's probably too bad. Grobbelaar's definitely cult because he's mad. And in my head, I only want to let in one of the lads from Istanbul. So that rules out Dudek. So I'm going to go with, of all people, Brad Friedel in goal.
Nice. We got Brad Friedel. Love it. So that's what a great start. So in goal, everybody, Brad Friedel.
And there's people going, Brad Friedel played for Liverpool. Yeah, he did, mate. He was great. He was amazing. I remember he came over from America and look at the size of this guy. So then in defence, you only need one defender, right? Modern era, we've got proper cult figures like Kolo Touré, who sort of came in. I thought he was going to be bad, but he was always all right. You know, like Phil Jones didn't play for United for like 3 years or something. And he came in, it was like, oh my God, he's going to be, and it was quite good. Kolo Touré was like that. Nat Phillips and Joel Matip are like a modern versions of that. Like Nat Phillips doing Cruyff turns around Ibrahimovic, Joel Matip just being mad. I mentioned before that I had a hamster called John Barnes. I then had fish called Russian Barnes many years later, who then died. So I started naming them after other players. I eventually got to Phil Babb, and Phil Babb lived the longest. So I got in my old flat. My wife was just like, what are you talking about? I had a fish called Phil Babb. But all those cult legends, the only defender I need is Jimmy Traore. Mm. Okay. So he came into Liverpool and he was this kind of gangly guy. My first memory of him is scoring the most spectacular back heel own goal against Burnley, which knocked us out of the FA Cup. And I looked at him going, how is this guy let alone Liverpool Premier League, how is he a professional footballer? And he was absolute dog. He was rubbish. But then fast forward to Istanbul 2005. In an extra time, he's no longer backheeling the ball into his own net. He's clearing it off the line, going away with a Champions League winning medal against one of the greatest AC Milan 11s you're ever likely to see. So, yeah, Brad Friedel, safe hands in front of him, Jimmy Traore.
Fantastic.
So I always think of players that score against your rivals become legends, don't they? Hmm. And I really don't like Danny Murphy, but he always used to score against Man United. So I was with Danny. Yeah, you know what I mean? I never really liked him as a Liverpool player that much, but he used to score against Man U, and that's enough for me. Recent ones, you're looking at Shaqiri, Luis Garcia. I always liked Momo Sissoko. He was like we'd ordered Vieira off Wish. It was just like he was like this big, strong midfielder, but just never quite as good as that. Lucas Leiva is another one from the 90s. Patrick Berger, who I love. But in my midfield, we talk about that 2001 season. We signed Gary McAllister, I think, on a free transfer. And everyone's like, why are you signing him? And he turned out to be an unbelievable signing. He was so good then. And he ended up sort of bringing Gerrard through nicely. And the two of them still work together. He's Gerrard's assistant coach. He was with him at Rangers. He got that Mickey Mouse treble for us in 2001. So against all odds and all the amazing midfielders, I've got Gary McAllister in
Fantastic. There. Gary McAllister in midfield. Brilliant. I love it already. This is exactly what we want. this is my favourite section of the podcast. I know why the listeners love it too. So let's take it. We've got two more players left. Who are you going for?
So again, loads of choices. I mean, Fowler and Owen are too good to go up top. Even though they are sort of cult legend, they're too good. I was tempted by Neil Mellor, who sort of came in, scored a couple of screamers, and then everyone noticed that he was rubbish, so we sold him. Heskey, who I managed to interview recently, who was sort of proper cult figure, but again, I think he's too good. I always admired Bellamy for his ability to play quite well and then cause a fight on the training ground. And I was very tempted by Stephen Colker. Remember a few seasons ago?
Yeah.
We got Stephen Colker from Reading. Was it Reading? No.
No.
Swansea, was it? Or Cardiff? I don't know. Yeah, Cardiff.
Cardiff. Yeah.
And then he only ever played for Liverpool up front for the last few minutes of the game. So I was like, I'll get Stephen Colker in there, but that's disrespectful. So I've got a number 10 type role in a five-a-side team, but he's still wearing number 10. And that is Jari Litmanen.
Wow. Now there's a name.
Yeah. So he's one of those players that, like, he was so good for Finland. He played for Finland for like 20 years. That's not an exaggeration. I think he played for like 22 years for the national team. And he was so good that they deported him because they just didn't know what to do with him. So they sent him to Ajax's academy when he was a kid. And he played at Ajax. He played at Barcelona. By the time he came to Liverpool, he was a bit older and he wasn't at his best, but you could see that little touch, that bit of skill. He was such a classy player. I absolutely loved him. I think he probably only did a couple of seasons, but I loved him so much. So I've got Jari Litmanen in the number 10 role.
Brilliant. Love it. We got one more now. Who's it going to be? We've had some mad names so far. I don't know what my toxic trait is listening to these fantasy teams and thinking, could that be done on a budget? Could we make this sort of game happen? I wonder what they're up to. I think I could probably tempt Brad Friedel for a charity match. Do you know what I mean?
You could, absolute minimum, you could get him on Cameo. You know what I mean? You could get this five-side team to do a message on Cameo, can you? You know, you could definitely get Momo Sissoko, who's on the bench, isn't he? So. So the ultimate cult player is actually quite a good footballer, but I've sort of covered that 2001 era, the Istanbul time, Brad Friedel for some reason, and up top, and his captain is Divock Origi.
Oh.
He's just like, sometimes he won't play for Liverpool for about 6 months, and then he gets a run in the Carabao Cup against like a League Two team, and he's rubbish. And then we play him against Barcelona, and he looks like Pelé. It's just like, now that is a cult player, how you can just like not even play, hardly come off the bench, and then just like score in Champions League finals. I mean, yeah, he's the ultimate cult player for me. So yeah, that's my five, with Divock Origi wearing the captain's armband.
Well, there we go. That is Dave Bibby's fantasy five-a-side Liverpool team of cult-like heroes. And that is spot on. That's exactly what we're looking for. And
I think I might get Roy Evans to manage them, if that's okay. He wasn't allowed to do it on his own. So he can do this team on his own.
I thought you might be kind and let Roy Hodgson just give them one more. Give him one more day.
Yeah. That's a no from me. I cut him off. There was a time this season when it looked like Liverpool were going to have a clash of games. Like, too many games because games are getting cancelled. And we needed to play Arsenal in the Carabao Cup and stuff like that. And I was like, let Gerrard do it, because Klopp had COVID. And then the assistant manager, I was like, come on, let Gerrard manage Liverpool for one game. But I'll have Roy Evans for my cult fives.
Love it. I love it. Well, Dave, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, mate. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's been great fun.
And to say thank you, I've got your little gift that I can send over to you. And I know you mentioned your memorabilia, which I'm pleased you did. I've got you this little gift. It's from Saturday the 26th of March, 1983. It's a football programme, Liverpool versus Man United, Milk Cup final. And I'm going to whack this over. And if you might not know, I had to look this up myself, obviously. But this was a Liverpool victory. They won 2-1 and under Bob Paisley, goals from Kennedy and Whelan. So they are a bit of history there. The Milk Cup, which I assume would have been the equivalent of the Papa John's Cup or the Carabao Cup, is now.
Yeah.
I love the way that they didn't have a proper sponsor. It was just milk. Just milk. Milk will sponsor.
Was that
it.
The Accrington Stanley adverts? Because that was sort of milk, wasn't it?
Yeah, it could have been.
Stanley? Who are they?
There we go. Yeah. And what we've got here is it is in prime.
Love that.
It is in prime condition. You have got the teams there. Somebody at the time has corrected down here that it wasn't David Hodgson. It was David Fairclough. Need to get that right.
Wow.
So it's all accurate, thanks to this editing of whoever had it. You've got some great posts in the middle there. We'll send that over to you as a thank you for coming on.
That is amazing. That's going to go with the rest of the merch here, like my Fowler cushion and things like that I've got knocking about.
Love it. Well, best of luck with the podcast. Do go and listen to it. So it's called Who's Your Team? And what else? Where can we find you online? Where can we find you on Twitter, Instagram, etc.? What have you got coming up soon?
I've got my new show, Dave Bibby Recreates Jurassic Park, while trying to bring up a baby. I did that at Leicester Comedy Festival. That's coming up, Museum of Comedy, a couple of other venues. As well as other gigs and bits and bobs. But yeah, follow me on Twitter. It's just at Dave Bibby. Instagram, I think I'm Dave.Bibby. I'm on TikTok as well, which I shouldn't be at my age, but here we are. I've got a Facebook page, but I'm awful at Facebook. You can find me there. And if you like, who is this knobhead? Then go to davebibby.com, click on the videos page and watch all my old sketches and songs and things like that. And also loads of football stuff. There's me interviewing Heskey and loads of other ex-footballers and Carlton Cole, who I mentioned before, people like that.
There we go. That's how I found you, through your work with football stuff. And it's fantastic. The interview with Heskey is really good. So as he said, davebibby.com, go on there and find him. For now, though, we're going to say goodbye. Good luck for the rest of the season. And look forward to hearing other episodes of the podcast. Best of luck with the new show as well, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks again to Dave Bibby, a fantastic guest to kick off the new series of the podcast. And thank you for tuning in. If you are new here, as I said, we have got loads of previous episodes that you can go back and listen to. And we've got some more fantastic guests coming later this series. So why not hit that subscribe button and then you'll be alerted to when the episodes come out. Which, if you remember, I did say it should be every Wednesday morning from now on. And I'm now kind of wondering if could I push it back to a Thursday, maybe a Friday, maybe the Monday after. No, every Wednesday, let's stick to it. In the meantime, why not follow us on social media? We're on Twitter and I nearly said LinkedIn then. We're not on LinkedIn. No, don't be on LinkedIn trying to recommend us for skills. No, we're on Instagram and we're on Twitter with the handle @ComTalkFootyPod. That's @ComTalkFootyPod. And if you want to find me on Instagram or Twitter, my handle is SamMichaelUK. Not to be mistaken for Sam Michael Ukraine. So thanks for listening to this episode. Next week our guest is Freddie Quinn, talking all things Manchester United. You're not going to want to miss that. So until then, thank you very much. Appreciate you listening and I'll see you soon. Take care.
Football. Soccer. At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game, comedians talking about football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.